We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft. But Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink. Which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to Inside Mizzou Athletics, presented by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com. Now, here is your host, Mike Kelly.
Hey, Mizzou Nation. I'm Mike Kelly. Matt Michaels is alongside. Welcome to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, presented each and every week by our friends at Shelter Insurance. Ask an agent about how now Shelter's auto policy includes roadside assistance. We're your shield, we're your shelter. Go to shelterinsurance.com. Tigers 1-0 last week as Mizzou knocked off the Kentucky Wildcats 20-10, the identical score in which Missouri's won the last time out against Kentucky. I should say their previous victory against Kentucky in 2014. Tigers snapped the skid and looked good on both sides of the ball, man.
I thought looked really good doing it. That's one of the more dominant wins that I can remember in some time for Missouri. And some of the stats pop off the page at you, but all you needed to do is watch the game and see how frustrated Kentucky was and how Missouri just sticked to its plan. They out-Kentuckied Kentucky. Everybody's been saying it. There's no other way to describe it. It was remarkable.
Well, and the one thing you know about Kentucky under Mark Stoops, and they will challenge your manhood in the line of scrimmage between the trenches. Missouri was the dominant team at the line of scrimmage, at the point of attack throughout. And to me, the other interesting thing about the game is that football, again, I think it's the greatest team sport that there is. And I've said it probably to you ad nauseum now. But the reason being is just look at how one played off the other. You know, the defense, yeah, they played great. Kentucky only got 35 plays. Why did Kentucky only get 35 plays? Because the Missouri offense was so dominant in terms of its ability to grind out drive after drive after drive to the tune of 92 total plays. And, again, it's the offense helping the defense helping the offense.
It was so dominant, I think, Mike, that a game in which Missouri had a 21-play drive that unfortunately came up empty was still a net positive. Because they forced Kentucky's defense on the field for that long. They gassed them, they got the ball right back, and they scored the next time down. It was one in which, like you said, it challenged your physicality, it challenged your resolve, and Missouri's resolve never wavered in that game, and Kentucky bent, and they eventually broke.
Yeah, you could see it after the 21-play drive that, yeah, Kentucky got a stop on that fourth and goal as they were able to get Connor Bazelak rolling out to the right towards the north end zone. But the damage done during the drive was evidence because Kentucky goes three and out. What a better – there's nothing better that Missouri's defense could have done for the offense that was on a roll, but then come up with a three and out and get them the ball right back because that just put Kentucky, again, even more against it because of the fact that their defense was so gassed. So impressive performance. You know, Eli Drinkwitz said prior to the game, we've got to be able to run the football.
Mm-hmm.
My, did they run the football on Saturday.
They knew it. He said it. He said, we're going to milk the clock. We're going to pound it. And they did. And I don't know what more you can say about Larry Rountree III because he exceeds his previous career high 4 carries in a game by a wide margin. and the stats won't come off the page in terms of the yardage, but every single one of those 120-plus yards were tough, tough yards for Larry, and he earned every bit of it. They really asked him to be the bell cow.
His 11th 100-yard game of his career, 126 yards against Kentucky. That was, of course, following up what he did against LSU when he ran for 119. 54 yards, he will bypass Zach Ebron to move into second place all-time behind the great Brad Smith, but he will become Missouri's leading rusher as a running back in program history. Who would have thought this when this kid from Raleigh, North Carolina, with the name of Larry Rountree III, showed up here in Columbia a few years ago?
It shows you that intent and, yes, ability and the chance to marry those two together can do a lot of good things. And for somebody who has stuck with the program, too, and even after this past season, he was very frank. He said, you know, I wasn't going to be this NFL first-round pick. Right, he kind of knew where he was. He said, I can get better and I can help my team. And boy, is he ever helping his team right now. They've got a chance to continue to grow throughout this season.
Well, and because of the way the draft has changed, I mean, it would take a lot for any running back to be selected in the first round in this day and age. But the other part of that game that really kind of stood out for me is a couple things. First of all, can we start getting on the Marcus Johnson bandwagon and the job that he's done as Missouri's offensive line coach? Do you remember how many games over the course of the last few years we watched the Missouri offensive line have back-to-back false starts on one drive? Do you know how many times we've seen missed assignments over the course of the last several years? You lose Delgado, who's making his fourth career start, right? Just a sophomore. Dylan Spencer comes in, and yeah, he wasn't perfect. He had mistakes. But the offensive line never missed a beat. I mean, Marcus Johnson is doing a terrific job with that room, and it's neat to see. And the other thing, too, is, man, if you can win a shootout the way you did against LSU 2 weeks ago and then follow it up with a grinded-out game against Kentucky, that speaks volumes about not only the discipline of your football team, but also the creativity of your coaching staff as well.
You know, Connor Bazelak said it after the game. He said, I knew all week long I had to take what they would give me. I had to go underneath. I had to not get impatient. Yeah. He said it himself. Yeah. And that comes straight from the top. Yeah. That comes from coaching, and Eli Drinkwitz in his ear saying, you have to make sure that you don't let these guys get chances at the ball. Yeah. And he protected his team by doing that. He took some shots when they were available. But you never saw him get off kilter. You never saw the Tigers get off plan. And I agree with you, Mike. You win one game one way. You win another in a completely different fashion. And, oh, by the way, you may have to go back to the first way against LSU, against the Florida Gators coming up this Saturday night. The ability to do that is the hallmark of a solid team.
Yeah, and, you know, the ability to understand in your third start of your career against a team that wants to bait you into mistakes, that you can't get greedy. That speaks of the maturity and the poise that we've talked about before of Connor Bazelak. But again, you know, I remember talking to Eli last Thursday and saying, okay, how do you coach a guy up who's going to see a defense that just simply is going to try and fool him each and every possession, each and every play? And he says, well, just a lot of film study. We're going to have to get in his ear. We're going to have to spend a lot of time. You know, and certainly Connor was up to the challenge. But, you know, here's what Missouri looked like. Missouri looked like a well-coached, disciplined team that was full of a bunch of mature competitors. When they made mistakes, guess what? Flush it, move on to the next play. I mean, again, that speaks volumes to where this team is right now compared to where we thought they might be at this stage.
I think of the beginning of one drive there in the third quarter, if memory serves me, where Bazelak went down the field to Damon Hazelton, overshot him. And that was the first real big shot of the game. And Hazelton was behind the defense. If he would have hit him in stride, it's a touchdown.
Yeah.
Ah, man, I missed it. Then on the next one, they try to go to the boundary, just short of the sticks. That one's wide and into the bench. Ah, man, I missed that one. On third down, Bazelak got every yard of the 10 he needed to complete that and to continue the drive. It just goes to show that a team that is handling its business and staying within itself has the ability to do really, really good things. And I think that's a pretty doggone good Kentucky team Missouri beat on Saturday. A lot of promise out of the result there.
This is an offensive line that's given up just 6 sacks this season, but only 1 in each of the last 3 games. Mm-hmm. Gave up 3 against Alabama. On third down, Missouri's converting 67% of their opportunities. We haven't seen that in quite a while from a Missouri offense. Dare I say, you might have to go back to the Chase Daniel era to see a team that converted on third down that efficiently. And then Bazalek's completing 71% of his passes. That would make a guy like Daniel smile quite a bit. It's fun to watch. He's spreading the football out to a number of different targets. And you can see as the game progresses, really the fingerprint of this coaching staff in terms of, from an offensive standpoint, trying to find matchups and trying to find who draws whom and trying to get the ball in their hands. And that's played out time and time again.
Yeah, and I think for the second straight week, the wide receiving corps did a very good job of finding its space, finding its spot to be available to the quarterback. I think back to the play where Jalen Knox found a streak in front of his home sideline there. It was a beautifully run route, and it was one of the few times that you caught Kentucky maybe a little bit fooled or in the soft spot of his own. Bazalek set it up perfectly. He looked right. He knew where the pattern was. Looked left, saw it, bang. He's making his reads. He is staying in control, and Missouri's offense is looking like it has some footing underneath it going into a crucial stretch of this season.
Yeah, and the other thing, too, the receivers are doing, they're all blocking downfield. Now, can they be better at it? Sure, but they're blocking downfield. The other thing, too, from a defensive standpoint, once again, the kid from Houston, Josh Bledsoe, comes up with a big play when you need it most.
What more can you say about him? Right? I mean, you
kinda
find...
He's in the shadow right of Bolton, which is probably correct, you know, with the way the Bolton's playing.
Yeah.
He's a first-round draft choice after the season in all likelihood. You know, depending on how they look at the measurables, you always got to put that little clarifier out there for any kid that has an opportunity to play at the next level. Is he too short to play linebacker in the National Football League? Well,
no.
I don't know. I don't think so. But, you know, Bledsoe has just risen to the occasion when his team needed him most.
You find a way in those situations, and he took obviously the turnover conversations over the week to heart, right?
Mm-hmm.
The takeaway conversations to heart with the way he just stripped it away from Josh Ali. And I go back to thinking about what Ryan Walters had to say after he reviewed the film of the LSU game. We should have had Josh Bledsoe on Terrace Marshall. I don't know if anybody can cover Kyle Pitts, but I wonder if Josh Bledsoe is going to be asked to do it more often than not on Saturday.
Yeah, something we'll talk about a little bit later on. Pitts, by the way, 17 receptions on the season already, 7 TDs. terrific, terrific talent at tight end from Florida, from Philadelphia. It's Matt Michaels. I'm Mike Kelly. Matt had a chance to speak with our special guest this week. Who is it this week?
It is Joshua Taylor, head coach of the Missouri volleyball team. This is really cool, and I asked Josh about this, but his team is only the second in SEC history to sweep the weekly awards from the Southeastern Conference in the sport of volleyball. 4 different individuals, 5 different awards, they did it. So we talk about that a little bit, and a great way to catch up before key matchups against Kentucky that are coming up on Wednesday and Thursday of this week at the Hearn Center. That's top 10 volleyball inside the Hearn Center this week. So it's an exciting time for Mizzou volleyball.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, Matt Michaels sits down with Josh Taylor of the Missouri volleyball team. After this, on the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast, presented by Shelter Insurance.
Hurry up, dude. The game's about to start.
Nothing beats spending the day watching the game with your buddies.
Dude, I'm literally right here. Let's do this.
Which is why a Shelter Insurance renter's policy is key to your winning game plan. It protects things your landlord's policy doesn't.
Dude, where's your TV?
What? No way, dude.
Like that flat-screen TV that just got stolen. To draft an agent for your team, visit shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield. We're your shelter.
As promised, here's Matt Michaels with Josh Taylor.
Joined right now by Mizzou's head volleyball coach, Josh Taylor, as the Tigers have a sweep of Alabama already in their quiver in a young season. That had to be pretty satisfying after a bit of a delay in the start to the year.
Yeah, it was awesome. You know, we had to put off our matches a couple of days, make sure everybody was healthy, and being able to play after 10 months of being off was pretty special. And, you know, obviously coming away with 2 wins in the SEC is always pretty big time, so we were happy with that.
When you were leading up to this campaign, which you knew was going to be different than any other that you had faced before, What were the main things going through your mind as a coach first? And then secondly, how you were going to relay that to your team members?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, it was a really long time since we coached in a match as well. It's not just for the girls, it's for the coaching staff as well. And, we talk often as a staff, we're incredibly athletic and our girls play really high level volleyball when we play disciplined. And that's one of the hardest things as an athlete is to be disciplined and mentally engaged for a full match, and let alone doing it on back-to-back nights. We communicate that in a couple ways. We put our girls in stressful situations in practice and require disciplined play. Physically, that's how we require it. And also it's something we harp on all the time. Every time out, I'm talking about that. Every time out in the match, practice, before the match, at all times, we're talking about playing disciplined volleyball, and that's the style of volleyball we play here. And when we do little things well, it really allows us to use our athleticism. And I think it really showed on night two. That's when it really shined, when we were playing disciplined.
You know, you really had to think coming into this year that the core members that you had back were the foundation of a team that could be pretty special. And circumstances being how they are, you never apologize for a top 10 ranking before the season comes. So folks across your sport thought the same thing. When you started seeing them in practice, and practice before you knew when the first game would be, what was going through your mind about the way you saw this team in your mind's eye to how they really developed in the month of August and September?
Yeah, when we were watching practice, same thing you're talking about. The core group was playing really high level volleyball, and they're continuing to get better, which is scary for opponents and great for us. Again, I think the biggest thing is that's been different this year is the depth that we've got. We've got some girls fighting for spots that maybe, in the past years, we knew their role would be different and more in a supporting role. And but this year we've got girls fighting for spots every day of practice. So competition is crazy high, and it really complements everyone on the team, because when everyone's competing really hard, everyone's finding ways to get better and being put in tough situations. So they do have to use what they're using in practice and apply that to game like situations. So I think the biggest thing is our depth allows us to constantly improve, and that's something that's vital when you're talking about an 8-month season.
Kylie DeBerg is a standout on your team, not just because of the offense, but because of her demeanor, I think, when she's on the floor. To see her achieve a career milestone last week in Alabama with her 1,000th career kill, and then have the SEC say, oh yeah, you were the best player in the league across this first week of action. What do you think it meant to her, and what does it mean to your team to have her playing at such a high level to start?
Yeah, I think, to be honest with you, I don't know if it means too much to Kylie. She's one of those people that doesn't really like to be recognized. She's a little shy, and I think I give her more trouble about that than anyone else. But really proud of her. She's made some big changes since transferring from Illinois, and it's not easy to make changes, and it's not easy or fun to work on things that you're not necessarily good at. And she buys into that. So it's been really impressive for me as a coach to watch her improve. And 1,000 kills, that's a lot of points. Mm-hmm. So, that's big time. And I agree with the SEC office. She was easily the best player in the SEC this past week. And I think what's exciting is she's becoming more of a vocal leader, and it's hard for her to communicate and be loud, and but she's doing a really, really nice job. And that was kind of our biggest goal for her, to be honest with you. We knew physically she'd continue to get better, and she's a student of the game in that way. But the biggest part for us and what we were hoping to see develop was the emotional side and the leadership side of her game. And it's coming together really nicely, especially, when we've got a freshman libero and Emily Brown, who was freshman of the week as well. So kind of guiding her along and being kind of a steady senior outside that she can be next to is something that is beneficial for Kylie and the rest of her teammates and the program. So it's been huge.
Right now, sitting down with Josh Taylor. He's head coach of the Missouri Tiger volleyball team, and they have a couple of matches coming up at the Hearn Center on Wednesday and Thursday of this week that I know you're excited to get into, Coach. But let's talk a little bit more about SEC overall player of the week, offensive player of the week, defensive player of the week, libero of the week, and freshman of the week, or setter of the week, I should say, instead of libero. I'm getting my positions confused for a moment. It's only happened one other time in league history. I think the look on your face right now is the look that you must have had when you heard the news yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. And all incredibly deserving. It was, to be honest with you, not an incredible surprise to me with how those four played. And, you know, talking a little bit about each of them, Emily Brown as a true freshman coming in and starting, you know, it's fantastic. And we knew recruiting her. She was an incredibly special player, and she's an amazing kid. And she's one of the most coachable kids since probably Alyssa Munlin that I've coached. Mm-hmm. And that's saying something. And she makes changes. She buys into it. And she's incredibly self-aware, which allows her to make changes on her own when the coaching staff doesn't see a mistake. Tiana, I mean, we always know her offense is fantastic, but defense is going to be what kind of elevates her to an All-American year. And it's something we talk about all the time. And her blocking, 11 total blocks, it was just ridiculous. You know, Andrea running a fantastic offense thing. We only had 4 attacking errors in night 2. So, you know, putting our attackers in great situations. And obviously, Kylie DeBerg, she's doing good things and playing great volleyball. So I'm really proud of all 4 of them. And, you know, something to keep in mind as well is other players that were in the match that weren't recognized played a role in those 4 receiving those honors. So it was really a team effort, but I was really proud of those 4 to get recognized individually.
You know, I find it interesting that you mention Alyssa Munlin and involved with coaching, but Tiana Omazic has developed that defensive part of her game as well. I mean, if Alyssa came into the program here and developed herself to an All-America caliber, I don't want to have you set too high an expectation, but is that the trend that we could see Tiana Omazic on if she continues her development on the defensive side?
I would have to reconsider my job if she did not get an All-American and she got better at blocking, because her offense is just fantastic. And, you know, it's something, again, her and I talk about, and it's really funny we're talking about right now, because yesterday in practice was the best I've ever seen her block since being her coach. And that dates back to 2018. She's doing fantastic things and being incredibly mindful. And as a middle, being a blocker, it's grunt work. You've got to block 4 attackers when the pin blockers only have to block 1. And most of the times, the middles don't get the credit. So it is grunt work. And she put her nose down and did it at Alabama and came away with 11 total blocks and really in tight situations for us, especially in night 1 as well. I was really proud of her. I would be absolutely blown away if she did not get All-American honors if she could continue to make improvements blocking.
Can you introduce us in brief to your newcomers, the ones that fans will be seeing mixing in throughout the course of the season? Obviously, a very solid introduction to one, but what about everybody who's new to your team?
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Emily Brown getting Freshman of the Week honors, but someone else who deserves some recognition is Anna Dixon. She came in and just... she's a special player, and as a staff, we talk about it's going to be insane being able to coach her for 3 years. What she's going to look like 3 years from now is going to be incredible. She's already playing at a really high level, and she attacks the ball at probably one of the highest points that I've seen in a pin attacker in a long time. And she saw some really great success against Bama, but also putting up a block that is just absolutely massive on the right side, you know, blocking the other team's outside attackers, which are normally the best attackers. So she's been huge for us. And another kid I really enjoy coaching. She loves making changes and she loves receiving criticism and applying that to her game. So it's really fun to coach her. And Aaron Williamson, I mean, that kid is a spark plug. And I think everyone remembers Riley Sense's kind of energy and attitude. And I think Aaron is Riley Sense maybe even on steroids here, even a little louder, even a little more energetic, and a pretty incredible teammate. So we've got some newcomers who are going to be making waves.
Do you think that's something a team needs? Is that leader to be maybe outwardly vocal and outwardly demonstrative, especially in a sport where swings and rallies mean so much to the flow of a game?
Yeah, absolutely. And volleyball is such an incredibly emotional sport. It's one of the sports where a play is done and you've got time to celebrate. And that's where teams either win or lose the emotional battle, is in between points. And having her there is incredible. She's not in the other team's face, but when one of her teammates makes a great play, she's the first to let that individual know that they're a star. And we're incredibly fortunate to have her on the floor and on the roster.
How has the world surrounding your sport been in the middle of a global pandemic? There are obviously changes to happen all over the place. The recruiting side of things with the NCAA and dead periods might be one of the biggest of all. But how has your job altered in the midst of the times we live in?
Yeah. Oh, man, it's been a lot. We barely traveled since COVID, and normally we're out every weekend recruiting kids and trying to build the program for the future. And it really kind of came down to remote communication, and we did a pretty good job of getting on FaceTime with kids, texting, emailing. I mean, we were writing handwritten notes weekly to our recruits, and we were making sure that they're not forgotten, we care about them, and they're going to be the future of this program. But in addition to that, it's just a constant awareness that we have to have as a coaching staff to keep our kids safe right now, encouraging them to do the right things when they're not on the court and when they're not training, and making sure little things like we're sanitizing volleyballs. Like, it's wild, but right. we're making sure those little things are getting done, and it's a whole different mindset that we've got to be in as a coaching staff, and we're adapting. And but you know, the biggest thing, regardless of being in a pandemic or not, is the safety of our kids. So just kind of shifting how we keep them safe.
Josh Taylor joining us. He's Mizzou's head volleyball coach as the Tigers get set with a 2-0 record to face the Kentucky Wildcats, a top 10 team, a top 5 team across the country in this year, coming into Hearn Center on Wednesday and Thursday. You get them twice in a row, and you get them off the top, and this is one of your top competitors in the league year in and year out. What are your first thoughts about these matchups coming up?
You know, Craig Skinner has done a pretty impressive job with that program, and, you know, he's a fantastic coach, and their style of volleyball is very similar to ours. They're an incredibly disciplined team, and they do little things well, and it really allows them to have some flashy moments, but I think what people don't realize is how well they serve and pass, and those two skills win and lose you matches. So we're going to have to be really efficient with how we get them out of system and how we ourselves stay in system when we're receiving serve. They've got some strong arms. They've got some young players who are incredible and amazing athletes. And it's going to be one of those battles where most of the match is probably going to be spent out of system and who hits harder and who hits, smarter. So it's a match that's going to be it's going to be a boxing match, to be honest with you. Punches thrown back and forth, and we're really excited because this is one of the matches where you see the highest level volleyball all year.
You know, I think it's interesting that you said that, because my next question was going to be, do matches like this against two very good teams end up in the flow or improvisational? It sounds like you kind of have to improvise and rely on your raw talents and your honed skills to get a win in this one.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the higher level volleyball, the better serving, and that's when you get pulled out of system, and that's when big players make big plays in tough situations. So, you know, we talked about Kylie DeBerg, and the greatest players, they're at their best when their best is needed, and we're going to need a great game from her both nights, and I've got no doubt that she's going to be able to pull that off. So it's going to be big gun versus big gun for sure.
What importance is there then, maybe outsized importance, on Andrea Fuentes when she gets her touch to set you up for maybe disadvantageous positions? And how much have you seen her grow in her abilities working with Molly over the course of now the past year or so?
Yeah, and keep in mind my bias because she's my wife, but she's the best setting coach in the country.
Well, you wouldn't just say that.
I wouldn't just say that. I truly believe it. And Andrea has been doing a really nice job of, again, being a student of the game and making improvements. And I think the biggest thing for us is, even when we're quote unquote out of system where a pass pulls us off the net, if Andrea can get her hands on the ball rather than bump setting, we want to be running with speed and we want to be putting our attackers in good situations. And she's done a good job of being comfortable, because that's not fun. You know, you're running to a ball full sprint and you try and get your hands on it and you try and set it fast and in a good location. It's really difficult. But she's been doing a really nice job of being uncomfortable and pushing herself to do that. And to be honest with you, if we can run with speed, even from off the net, I see us being in good situations against the Wildcats.
A couple of final questions here for Josh Taylor, Mizzou head volleyball coach, as the Tigers entertain Kentucky on Wednesday and Thursday of this week. Success for you in two matches against Kentucky looks like what? And that doesn't even have to include a win at the end.
Yeah, that's a great question. I think success for us on Wednesday and Thursday would be continuing to play disciplined volleyball, to play our style. And it's something that we were really harping on the girls on playing against Alabama. It's so easy when things go poorly or when the other team throws a punch and hits you in the mouth to go back to bad habits. But the biggest thing for us is going to be playing disciplined. And if we do that, I think we'll see success in a form of a win. But success and how we're framing that is getting better at being disciplined more often.
And what will it mean for your team, with all the support it has across Mid-Missouri and across the state, to have an opportunity to, even if the crowd is limited, play in front of home fans for these matchups?
Yeah, man, it's a special thing, and we haven't done it in so long. It's something that we've missed. And just yesterday, they were getting the Hearns ready for game day setup, and it gives you chills being in there and realizing that you're going to have people in there cheering for you. And again, like we talked about earlier, volleyball is such an emotional sport, and the fans truly are the seventh player on the floor. They provide such great energy, and I think it's hard for people to realize how much of a benefit having a full crowd is there. And I think right now we've only got like 50 tickets left, since we're, you know, lower capacity, but having our home crowd there and them supporting us is something that means more to us than I think people realize.
When you think about the place where we all were to the place we are, do you ever kind of pinch yourself and say, you know what, we get to do this again?
Yep.
And we get to do this in 2020, and yep, we get to do it with fans in the stands.
Yeah, that's a daily thing, to be honest with you. And the reason being is because we as a coaching staff kind of harp on this with our girls, but this is kind of the way us four live, is coming from a place of gratitude. And we're only one of four conferences that actually get to play right now. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine not being able to play an opponent. It would drive me nuts. But we're so grateful being able to play an opponent. I was actually talking to Craig Skinner on the phone this morning, and he said, we can't wait to play you guys. I'm so happy we get to. And it's one of those things that we agree on, and we're incredibly grateful that we get to play a match, and even more grateful that we get to have home fans there.
Josh Taylor, head coach of the Missouri Tiger volleyball team, with us after a fantastic weekend in Alabama. We cannot wait for what it looks like against Kentucky. If you want one of those tickets, best idea is to get in touch with the Mizzou ticket office ahead of time. Get that ticket ahead of time. 1-800-CAT-PAWS. You can call from anywhere across the state. And the Tigers look forward to seeing you in the stands for Wednesday and Thursday evenings. Josh, it's always a pleasure to catch up. We wish you all the success this week and in the rest of this fall season.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for having me on. See y'all in Hearns.
Hope you enjoyed Matt's conversation with Josh Taylor. And, you know, the one thing that we're always struck by when you have a chance to sit down with him is just how, we've used this word before, right? How poised he is at a young age as a head coach, first year officially as the head coach, an interim mm-hmm. year ago, but just how intelligent he is, and his presence in the room of a, or in the family room of a recruit must play. It's got to be just absolutely perfect.
I think you can hear it in the way that he breaks down his team and breaks down even something as simple as the matchup against Kentucky. You know, when he said, hey, this is a matchup in which your talent has to come to the fore. You get out of system, you get all messed up. Who's going to make those big swings? Who's going to adjust to that? He's obviously someone who's very well prepared in terms of the ways he understands what his team is, what it can do, and what it might be in the future. And then to have that sort of level of just knowledge of the game and knowledge of who you are and what your program is, and to carry that into someone's living room. He's just an extremely impressive guy to speak to.
I don't know the answer to this, and you're the one who's always much more in tune than I am, but crowd at the Hearns Center, what are they allowing in for the sport of volleyball?
You know, it's significantly limited, and right now, as you heard Coach Taylor say just a moment ago, there might be about 50 or so seats left. It's mm-hmm. very spread out. It's within the guidelines that are set out with the plans with Boone County, of course, and the University of Missouri. You know, people have conversations about that all the time. So it will be a smaller crowd. I don't think it will be any less of a rambunctious crowd, especially with the way Mizzou volleyball supporters are. It's unfortunate that you can't have more of a full house mm-hmm. under the circumstances against Kentucky. But the seats are at a premium. So if you are interested, it's probably best to call 1-800-CATPAWS to get in touch with the ticket office directly and say, hey, what's out there? What can I do? Because season tickets have already been sold to those who are interested, and there are many who are still. And the availability for matchups like Kentucky, and I'd imagine, you know, the rest of the matchups, the two that are coming later this fall, I think just Arkansas, in fact, next week at the Hearn Center. It will be a tough ticket to get, so get yours early.
1-800-CATPAWS, 884-PAWS in Mid-Missouri, or log on to mutigers.com. Matt Michaels, I'm Mike Kelly. This is the Inside Mizzou Athletics Podcast. Tigers head to Florida this week to take on the Gators, who will be playing for the first time since October the 10th, when they went to Texas A&M and lost by three. And I was doing some research, getting prepared for the game this weekend, and I was looking just to refresh my memory of the numbers, Matt, that Texas A&M put up against this mm-hmm. Florida defense, right? We know Florida, from an offensive standpoint, explosive, averaging better than 40 points a game. Texas A&M, on October the 10th, ran for 205, threw for 338, 543 yards of total offense, had 32 first downs, 34 minutes of time of possession. They were 12 for 15 on third down. They were 6 for 6 in the red zone. And they did not allow a sack against the Gators from a defensive standpoint. Now, the coaches will say that you can really learn a lot during an off week, mm-hmm. off 2 weeks in the case of Florida. You maybe not be able to spend much time on the field from a technique standpoint, right? But certainly they've had the opportunity, Todd Grantham and his defensive staff, to spend a lot of time in film study. And it's going to be interesting to see the type of defense that Missouri sees on Saturday evening at the Swamp.
Yeah, there is the unknown of a couple of weeks off and presumably a staff and players who are preparing for Missouri for a couple of weeks.
And who's available.
Yes, we don't know that. So right. All of that is thrown into this cauldron, right? And what comes out? Well, if it's anything like what we've seen so far from Florida, the Gators allow 6.3 yards per play in aggregate across their games. And if you break out just the Texas A&M game, that's 7.3 yards per play against A&M. So they can be had. There was still 300-plus passing yards from the Aggies in that contest. And I look at the way the LSU game played out, and I just say to myself, Missouri might be able to get that same sort of stuff against Florida. But they will have to be judicious. We always know that Florida has a lot of speed on the outside and in the back seven of their defense. And I feel like maybe even a hybrid model could be the best. Connor Bazelak making decisions, trying to go underneath the defense when it's possible, but this might be a game where you get a little bit more risk-taking. You find matchups on the outside where you go one-on-one. You try to see what you can do to stretch the field and find soft spots. And then, whenever you establish that, and hopefully for the Tigers at some point establish the lead, you've got Larry Rountree III and Tyler Beatty, and they did it for you this past week. If you ever have the lead, I think that trying to be judicious with the clock and extending drives and wearing Florida's defense down is going to be a similar path to victory.
Florida's allowing just under 5 yards per carry through its first three games of the season. The other thing, too, that stands out about them defensively is kind of similar to Missouri. They're not getting a lot of takeaways. They've only got 3 turnovers in the first three games, a couple of fumble recoveries and only one interception. And so, again, it'll be interesting to see how Missouri attacks them from an offensive standpoint. And then the other thing, too, is, you know they've got great speed on the outside when it comes to their wideouts and Tony and Copeland and others. But, you know, it's the big man, number 84, that you gotta keep an eye on and be able to somehow contain. And, you know, obviously the breakout game against Ole Miss when he had 4 touchdowns and 8 receptions for 170 yards, something like that. Mm-hmm. Scored, you know, on short plays, scored on long plays. Had only, I think, 2 touchdown receptions against South Carolina, and 1 touchdown reception against Texas A&M. But he is a load. He's a tremendous athlete at 6'4", and has proven his ability when he catches the ball, you know, in tight windows to make people not only have trouble bringing him down, but then he can run away from a defense too.
You know, he is a physical matchup that Florida looks at on film and says, we've got a plus here. It has to be in terms of his size. So what Missouri will have to do is kind of what they did a little bit against Kentucky and at the very end of the LSU game. You have to find ways around him. You have to front him. You have to go for the ball sometimes first, as long as you have help and you know that help is there. I think that this game is the biggest test for Missouri's secondary yet, notwithstanding the Alabama game, which is a big test for all facets of your defense. I think that Kyle Trask, you know, provided he's available, is the best quarterback Missouri will have seen that's not named Mac Jones. It will be a similar type of test. He is very accurate. He is very decisive. He will try to do things to fool your defense, and I am very interested in seeing how Missouri's secondary and back seven live up to that challenge.
71% of the passes he's completing. I remember a couple of years ago when Missouri won in the swap, he came off the bench late, and you could just see the arm talent right away. I mean, mm-hmm. a big guy, too, you know, 6'5", 230 pounds out of Manville, Texas. So, you know, tremendous challenge, more than anything, though, tremendous opportunity for Missouri to make it three consecutive wins on the season. And, you know, you wonder, after being off for a couple of weeks, how do the Gators operate? How efficient are they on the offensive side? You know, I look back at what the Tennessee Titans did a couple of weeks ago. Coming back from the two-week layoff, they were pretty doggone good. Now there's a difference in terms of the professionals and the college kids in terms of what they can do and what mm-hmm. they can't do, you know, when you shut down your facility. So a lot of intrigue with this game, a lot of intrigue. And I think it's a very important game for both teams, too, because it's an opportunity for Missouri to continue to climb, right, not getting a lot of respect. 13-point underdog going to the swamp where you won 2 years ago. Florida off for 2 weeks. Again, double-digit underdog for the fourth time in five games. And so a lot to play for.
Mm-hmm. There is a lot to play for, and I think this is the game where if Missouri goes in and they find a way to beat the Gators in the swamp, that's when the rest of the league opens up their eyes real wide and goes, oh, what's Eli Drinkwitz got cooking in Columbia, Missouri? Because, I mean, you think about what the opportunities become if you have a win over Florida in hand. You got a win over a West opponent in LSU in hand. You can't count them any further than 1 week ahead and 1 week at a time, but you do start opening the door to possibilities if your team continues to improve and continues to play very well if you get a win over a top 10 caliber Florida Gators team. And it is not without the realm of possibility. I don't look at any game on Missouri's schedule the rest of this year. The way they've played in two consecutive games, Mike, if they stick to their plan and they execute their plays, they're going to be competitive in every game they play in if they play the way they're playing right now.
You know, the other thing we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, we knew Tyler Beatty was a very good, you know, receiver out of the backfield. What we've seen, I think, in the last really 2 to 3 games, he's a kid that's learned how to run the football in this league. And now what you've established the big back in Roundtree that can pound you and get the yards after contact. But now you got a guy like Beatty, as it was evidenced in the fourth quarter. You give him the change of pace, and that kid that's got the speed that hits the hole in the hurry, that puts defenses in a different sort of predicament that they haven't been in before. Tyler before was kind of consistently trying to use his speed, a little more east and west and getting north and south. Now he's learning how to get those pads north and south and from the get-go get through the hole and pick up yards.
You know, that's something I hadn't really considered before, but it makes a lot of sense, Mike. If you give time and space to a defender in the Southeastern Conference, just think any linebacker, any middle linebacker in the league if we're talking about the run game. If you give that player time to make the decision and space to run to a spot that he thinks you're going to be at, he's going to be there most of the time. See how Nick Bolton does it. He flows to the ball, he makes a read of the ball carrier, he follows it, and he just bang, he hits it right there. If he's got an angle, he's going to be in there. Well, if you take away that time to make the decision or to make the read, and you do get north and south, and you hit your hole decisively, all of a sudden you've put that player at a bit more risk. And you can find yourself reacting quicker than he can react, and then you found the second level in a big play. I hadn't really thought of it that way with Beatty, but I think it's a very good thing to consider about the way he can continue to have success and maybe have more success between the tackles than people would give him credit for in this league.
Let's go around the league a little bit. Alabama, of course, rolls by Tennessee. Tennessee's got problems, as we know. Jeremy Pruitt claims that the gap is closing between the Volunteers, and you would think so with the number of 5-star kids, 4-star kids that he's bringing in. Alabama, huge loss, though, in the very first play when Jalen Waddle suffers the ankle injury that now he's out for the season. Very similar to the one that Kenyon Drake suffered a couple of years ago, who's now in the NFL. But, you know, they've got players, right? Mechie steps up, makes plays. Slade Bolden gets an opportunity, gets pushed into the starting lineup. Mac Jones is just efficient, as you can imagine. And that offensive line is terrific. And, again, I still think that they have more that they can do on the defensive side of the football. But curious what you think, how much the loss of Waddle impacts Alabama moving forward.
Well, it's an impact because it's a weapon, and Steve Sarkisian, you know, must be trying to figure out new ways to handle his business without him. There are probably plays in the playbook that aren't as effective without a player of his caliber. But I think Mechie just steps up, and you saw what he did. He had a 100-yard receiving game. He had a couple of touchdowns. He just kind of slides right in terms of someone you can rely on as a second big play threat in the receiving game. I wouldn't be surprised to see him put up nearly All-American numbers with the way he can get deliveries from Mac Jones, and I mean they'll find a way. But you're right. The defensive side of the ball is one that can improve for them based on their historical standards. And you know, we probably have to consider the possibility, Mike, that maybe it won't get to that standard. It can still be very good, especially in the SEC this year with the offense it's mated to, and have a lot of success in the wins and loss column, but not be the Alabama defense that we're all used to seeing.
I think Waddle's impact, the loss of Waddle, is going to be felt more in special teams than from an offensive standpoint, because I think they've got the weapons offensively to spread the ball even, you know, around other targets. Now, do you have that guy that can, you know, go the distance, you know, on a little bubble screen? Devontae Smith probably, but you don't have the sheer burst that Waddle had. And Devontae Smith, it's interesting. Some have said, well, he's catching the ball so much better this year. He looks like a different player. Well, when you're behind Jerry Jeudy and Ruggs, and you're the third option, and now you're the one option, you're going to look different, right, catching the football?
Yeah.
I mean, I would think so. Let's go around the league a little bit more. Auburn got an important win, tried to give it away late at Ole Miss. You know, what was the big talk coming into the season in the Southeastern Conference? Lane Kiffin and the Pirate. Both are kind of struggling a little bit.
Yeah. Lane Kiffin is worrying how many banks he can hit up in the area for all the pennies he has to pay to the league office for a $25,000 fine after criticizing the officials.
Well, and that then comes out of the football budget. He's fine.
Yeah, well, he wants to make a special delivery, it sounds like. I think that's 2.5 million pennies, Mike, so if he can find them. I mean, there's a chain shortage, so good on him.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he is struggling, and I tell you what, Mississippi better not overlook the Vanderbilt Commodores in Nashville. They can't afford to. As a one-win team right now, and the way that they've been frustrated as an offensive team in one game already this year, they can't afford to look past anybody right now. You've got only one win. I know they're confident in what they do, and they have a very good offense when Corral is working.
Matthew, it's Vanderbilt.
I understand, but this is 2020. It's a weird year.
It's still
weird
Vanderbilt.
Things can happen. I'm just saying, I can't say that I'm completely shocked if Ole Miss finds itself in a game it doesn't want against Vanderbilt, because once in a while, Vanderbilt does that thing where they give you all the problems in the world.
Who does the Pirate have this week?
He's got that guy named Saban. Yeah, that's going to be very struggling.
Yeah, good luck with that. And, you know, it's interesting. You know, the Air Raid has got principles of the run and shoot, right? And people figured out in a hurry. You know, depth on the defensive side, play a lot of zone, get deep in coverage, keep everything in front of you. That's the way that you can slow this air raid attack down. You know, it's an intriguing game for me, Arkansas and Texas A&M.
Yes.
And you know what? Arkansas is going to win the game.
I'm not on that
A&M bandwagon. I think Arkansas goes in there and wins. I really do.
Yeah, I'm not surprised at all by it. I don't know what the folks who are looking at this from a professional angle think about the margin in the game, but I don't think there's much margin at all, because we've seen against better offenses on paper than Texas A&M's, I feel like, Arkansas have a lot of success. So what's going to change in that one? You know, Arkansas isn't frightened of Texas A&M. They seem every year to play neck and neck with the Aggies until something changes late. The only thing that's different is I believe the game is played in front of the Kyle Field crowd instead of Jerry's crowd out there in Dallas because of the pandemic. So that is one change. It's not a neutral site. It is a home site. But Arkansas defense can travel, and they play a legitimate brand of defense in this league. I don't know that I'm all the way there with you yet saying they will win the game, but I absolutely believe they're there in the fourth quarter with a chance to win the game.
Yeah, I agree. Other games that stand out to you this weekend?
Well, Georgia and Kentucky can be interesting here because Kentucky's in a place where they've had offensive struggles for each of the last couple of weeks. And what do they do to rectify that against a team that's one of the more physical defenses, whether or not they're performing at the standard you expect, that we know in the SEC? I think that is fascinating to see if Kentucky can find some sort of a fight against the Georgia Bulldogs. They'll be back at home. I'm not expecting Kentucky to win the game, but to see how they bounce back would be fascinating because I think Kentucky's a pretty good team, but if they get hit in the mouth with a loss here, all of a sudden, you know, they're underwater and they're feeling, okay, what do we have to do?
I'm anxious to see how Stetson Bennett plays in this game. I mean, you know, Kirby Smart said that after the loss to Alabama, he was his quarterback moving forward. We're going to continue to get guys reps, but he's a starting quarterback. Okay, so you come out against a good Kentucky defense. If you had a Jarrett Garantano type of game, does he switch quarterbacks in a hurry? And that'll be something that'll be intriguing to watch. But, you know, from purely a talent standpoint, I just think Georgia's got too many weapons for Kentucky to contain. And as we found out, if Kentucky gets a couple of mm-hmm. scores behind, it's yes. really hard for them to come back. That's the other thing. Kentucky, who do they play? I mean, do they stay with Terry Wilson? Do you give Joey Gatewood a chance?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be kind of one of those things that you'll keep an eye on as the season progresses.
But I think we see what happened when the rubber hit the road against Missouri. It was Wilson.
Came back with Wilson. And it was a great throw.
It was Wilson delivering that throw, which might have been, if not the best, one of the three best throws by either side in the game to Josh Ali on that touchdown. So I think they still roll with him. They trust him in those moments. The other thing to consider there is, does Georgia have its eyes on Jacksonville in that game? And that game, by the way, is played at 11 in the morning against Kentucky.
Yeah.
And the Missouri game is coming later. So Georgia could not know possibly before that game how Florida works out. They got to presume that, all right, Florida's going to take care of Missouri at home, right? So if they don't have their minds on the Kentucky Wildcats, I could see that game getting interesting. If they have their minds as players instead on, well, we have to take care of Florida, and then we win the SEC East.
I think you get a locked-in Georgia team that goes to Lexington this weekend. I just feel like they will. What about South Carolina, you know? What about an old Will? You know, he was a little bit the seat was a little red when the season started. Think he's feeling the embers yet?
I don't know, but I think the LSU result gets those embers a little bit stoked again.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, an LSU team that I think South Carolina felt they could have a better offensive performance against and didn't. And I think that result last weekend, although you can't play transitive property forever, I think it can be instructive for Missouri fans about how South Carolina comes in and, you know, they think offense is working all right and all that. And then LSU's defense might be okay, you know, maybe with some time off. Who knows what's going on there? But if you wanted to compare the two teams right now, I think you got to say Missouri's got a nose ahead of South Carolina, if you want to call it the horse race.
Yeah, winnable game. TJ Finley looked good, obviously, in his first start as a true freshman. And, you know, he was good. Okay, so other things that we need to talk about this week. What is it that you want to talk about? Because invariably there's always something that we get done doing the show,
mm-hmm.
and we take two steps out in the hallway, and you say, well, why didn't you talk about this? So I'm pausing. The stage is yours.
Well, that World Series Game 4 was something else. Did you watch that?
Too late.
Too late at night?
Too late.
Yeah. No. That's true.
Did I watch the Sunday night football game? Too late.
Too late?
I've got priorities in my life. Yeah. Late night sports is not among them.
The finish of that game 4 was one of the better World Series finishes on the big stage that we've seen.
I don't even know what happened other than the Dodgers won.
Oh, they traded runs in every half inning for like 4 or 5 consecutive half innings. And then at the finish, Brett Phillips, the former Kansas City Royal, gets the game-winning hit. Randy Arozarena, once a St. Louis Cardinal, gets caught between home and third and dives home on a mad dash. It was wild.
Arozarena.
Yeah. I mean, we can have a conversation about that, but it's not necessarily a Major League Baseball podcast. But I have thoughts, I guess.
On the trade? Was the game, was that game as good as the, what was it, game 6 between the Cardinals and Rangers a few years ago?
The way it finished was crazier. The Freeze game, I think, stands as one of the 5 best World Series games all time, period. It might be the best because of the drama that was involved down to the final strike a couple of times. You have the individual hero in Freeze in the game. And, by the way, that David Freeze anniversary has come and gone here in the course of the week.
David Freeze, the one-time former Missouri Tiger. A little story about the Freeze game, and just to underscore my point from earlier. Missouri had a game the next day. Mm-hmm. It was a Friday evening game, as I believe, memory serves. I went to bed, woke up, Cardinals tied, went to bed again, came back, just in time to watch Freeze win it. So
you had good timing.
Yeah, I did. I did. I think my wife might have actually said, hey, you might want to come watch this. Brad had an interesting conversation, Brad Trinago, our colleague, with Mark Burns, the cross-country coach here at Mizzou. And I have not been out to the facility, but from everything you hear, you read, this Gans Creek cross-country site must be just unbelievable. To the tune of the fact that the NCAA championships are coming here in a couple of years.
To the standard of cross-country courses that collegians get to run on, it's at the very top. And to the standard of cross-country courses that are laid out that, as I've talked with Mark Burns about this in the past, that are fair to the runners, that give them opportunities to pass, that create an exciting race for the fans, and a course that is set up, let's be frank, for television purposes, for presentation to a wide audience, it is among the best in the world.
You know, this is how clueless I am. Like when I think cross country, go run in the woods. Just find a little path and. But he's talking about how there's fiber cable to different points in the golf, the course, and bank turns and. I never knew any of this existed in cross country.
And I didn't until I talked to Mark Burns about it. I think the first time I really started to hear about it was a couple years back, maybe even 3 years back, in front of the Tiger Quarterback Club, where Mark Burns says, it's not finished yet, but we think it's coming. We have plans and designs on a course that is going to be one of the best anywhere, that is going to host NCAA championships, SEC championships, you name it. We're going to do it here. And they partnered with the city of Columbia, Mizzou Athletics did. They got that done, and now they have it. And as far as I've heard, the people who have run it have enjoyed the course immensely from a competitive standpoint for the collegians. And, oh, by the way, the city of Columbia gets a place where anybody can go out and enjoy the course and get some of their own cross-country in on a nice day or even a not-so-nice day.
Yeah, I'm totally clueless on cross-country. But you asked me about Mizzou indoor track and field. Let me tell you. I mean, like, for instance, I know that Nick Adcock is the school record holder in the indoor 60-meter hurdles at 7.92, and that he also is the heptathlon indoor school record holder. And I also knew that, did you know that the high jump record indoor is 7.5?
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah.
You got to drop those facts in on a football broadcast sometime. You know, because everybody just likes, do this day in Mizzou indoor track trivia.
That would require me taking pictures of the posters that are behind us on the wall as we're doing this podcast. But anyway, had enough for today?
Yeah, sure.
Good to see you.
Yeah, good to see you too. You too.
It's Matt Michaels. I'm Mike Kelly. Thanks for listening to the Inside Mizzou Athletics podcast. Valerie Thames, by the way, 8.45 in 2017 at 60-meter hurdles.
That's clutch.
That's flying. Join us next week on the podcast presented by Shelter Insurance. Ask a shelter agent about how the auto policy includes roadside assistance. Find an agent near you at shelterinsurance.com. We're your shield, we're your shelter. Goodbye.
This has been Inside Mizzou Athletics with Mike Kelly, brought to you by Shelter Insurance. Find an agent for your auto, home, and life at shelterinsurance.com.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.